Good morning.
Good morning.
Enough holiday for a little while? Maybe so. What's coming up in January, February? There's more coming along. Well, next week is my birthday. And this talk was originally... I was originally scheduled to give a talk next week on my birthday, so this thinking about 78 years and what that kind of perspective means for my practice is kind of in the background of this talk. What does that mean that I was born 78 years ago? I can't see it that way. I looked up born in the dictionary, and the first explanation I came to said came forth. I came forth, or something came forth. I liked that because it doesn't say brought forth. It says came forth. There was some momentum behind life that produced this coming forth in the wee hours of a Sunday morning in Sacramento. My father was a preacher, so he had to scramble to be there and then go preach a sermon. But what's clear in that process of being brought forth. I don't know if I explained what I meant right. I said came forth. Brought forth. It doesn't come forth by my own effort. And nowhere is it more clear in this phenomena of being brought forth that we have no possibility of acting independently. If we talk about insight or simply zazen or preparing a meal, it's utterly and clearly obvious we are dependent on each other and a whole universe of beings. And that other includes, of course, trees, wolves, hammers, politicians, guns, and hospital beds, everything. Everything comes forth or is brought forth as our life. But we forget. We forget that the other, however we meet the other, or what we pretend is other, is the content of our own life. But ego takes charge. We build a structure out of our experiences, our likes and our dislikes, the things we turn away from and the things we grasp, and we call that me or myself. Well, that structure is a necessary and wondrous part of being human and being part of culture and the universe. But we let it take over. Shakyamuni Buddha and our teachers and spiritual ancestors have given us, I think, a profoundly different possibility. Many years ago, in my teenage years and well into young adulthood, I had a burning question. It came up over and over and over for me. Would I ever do anything that was really done by Ken Ford? would I ever write anything, would I ever say anything that isn't an idea I got from somebody else? And I wondered and wondered and wondered, who is Ken Ford and what does Ken Ford have to offer? That, it appeared to me, within the value structure of our culture was what mattered. The accomplishment that would have my name on it. But when I tried, and I tried, I found it impossible to think of even an idea that hadn't been formed in reaction to something else or somebody else. I could not see how I could ever know what my contribution was supposed to be. So it was well into my early years of Zen practice that I began to see, and it became clear pretty quickly, that I was asking the wrong question. Once my teachers had nudged me toward a view of reality that was more accurate, encouraged me to see what's really going on, and always moving at what Katagiri Roshi called super speed, everything is changing, I came slowly to understand some of the real questions. How can I walk through this life with a heart that is not closed down to the ambitions of the small, self-centered mind? The small self, as we call it. Copyright Ken Ford. But open to life, all of life, as it is this moment. Open to everything. My human heart and mind are by nature self-centered, and that's the way it is. And we will never lose all of our self-centered orientation. That comes with being a human being. But could I touch and know in some way that deeper stream of human life that I began to sense, to feel in my bones as I sat with Katagiri Roshi and all of my other teachers? The deeper stream of life that the silence of Zazen pointed to. Silence, real silence, is, I think, setting aside or moving beyond the language structure, the thinking process in our mind that keeps ego, me, mine, at the center. Silence. How can I learn to act lovingly in response to this universe? A universe, and my experience of silence and in silence has taught me, is bringing my life forth moment by moment by moment. Yes, something called me was brought forth 78 years ago. But I don't really believe them when they say that I was born in 1940. What was brought forth then? None of the cells that make up even the most dense tissue in my body were part of what was brought forth. None of the insights that comprise my understanding of this life or anything about it were part of what was brought forth. None of the ingredients of my spiritual path that gives me my priorities today were part of what was brought forth. Every moment, every instant of every day, I can see something is being brought forth that I call my life. And I hope I will be able to trust this being brought forth, whatever comes. And at my death, there will be no cessation of life being brought forth. My Zazen practice nurtures trust. And it is trust in this life, trust in the process of bringing forth that is going on. However imperfectly I manage it and however frequently I fail to trust, it is that trust that transforms fear and our self-centered reactivity into something closer to an open heart. A heart radically accepting everything as it is arising at the moment. Trust, because we see that either we let go of our small preoccupations and say what we need to say, do what we need to do, trusting what life brings forth, or we stay back in our realm of fear and hesitation. Katagiri Roshi, who was our founding abbot for this practice in Minnesota and my original teacher, said, like physics and biology, Buddhism is an attempt to study things as they are. But in Buddhism, particularly Zen Buddhism, what we study is something more than what appears as objects to our mind. To do Zazen correctly, he said, is to immediately go beyond all distinctions. To go beyond all distinctions, what's good and bad, I like and dislike, and open our hearts to the whole of what this life is in the moment, is to trust everything. And in our practice, the silence of Zazen is that great trust. I'd like to read a poem by David White. He understands. And apparently David White has a Buddhist practice. I know Byakran has done a workshop or retreat with him in Europe. This poem is called Everything is Waiting for You. Your great mistake is to act the drama as if you were alone. As if life were a progressive and cunning crime with no witness to the tiny hidden transgressions. To feel abandoned is to deny the intimacy of your surroundings. Surely, even you at times have felt the grand array, the swelling presence, and the chorus crowding out your solo voice. You must know, note the way the soap dish enables you, or the window latch grants you freedom. Alertness is the hidden discipline of familiarity. The stairs are your mentor of things to come. The doors have always been there to frighten you and to invite you. And the tiny speaker in your phone is your dream ladder to divinity. Put down the weight of your aloneness and ease into the conversation. The kettle is singing even as it pours you a drink. The cooking pots have left their arrogant aloofness and seen the good in you at last. All the birds and creatures of the world are unutterably themselves. Everything is waiting for you. Everything. Category Roshi said, when your practice is very deep and your body and mind are very calm, you understand human feelings. You understand the feelings of the bird, the feelings of the tree. You understand everything. Maybe you understand the feelings of the soap dish. Still, there is suffering that is very calm and silent. It is a kind of fear, a very deep fear coming from the body, from the bottom of the human mind and heart. You cannot explain it, but it is always there. You have to face this suffering too. My practice has not led me to a land of bliss that I might have imagined when I first read about Zen. It has turned me toward my suffering. But strangely, perhaps, this is where I have found my heart softening, my mind opening to an infinitely wider view of the universe that brings my life forward moment by moment. Notice Category Roshi's words, the feelings of the bird, the feelings of the tree. This kind of awareness, more attentive to inner qualities than surface impressions, I often call seeing from the inside out, or simply from inside. And this is what Category Roshi meant by one of his favorite words, intimacy. As I think David White is saying, and Category was saying, we never lack for friendships and the opportunity to be intimate, because we can be intimate with the coffee pot. We can be intimate with the chair and the table. We can learn to treat everything as a friend. And we can understand the feelings of the bird, the feelings of the tree. Artists, artists within the realm of their art, I think, I observe, know something of the non-conceptual, non-limited mind that sees from within. I noticed in program notes for the Minnesota Orchestra concert right around Christmas, comparing the 1812 overture, which is very bombastic, and the serenade in C major for strings, composed at the same time, Tchaikovsky said, "I have written two long works very rapidly, the festival overture and a serenade in four movements for string orchestra. The overture will be very noisy. I wrote it without much warmth or enthusiasm, and therefore it has no great artistic value. The serenade, on the contrary, I wrote from an inward impulse. I felt it, and I venture to hope that this work is not without artistic qualities." The one was noisy, that overture has, we love it. It's very bombastic, very noisy. But it's kind of on the surface compared to a more intricate work like the serenade. I wrote from an inward impulse. And that impulse, it is implied, was characterized by warmth and enthusiasm. We can notice the kind of impulse from which anything comes in our life. And we can remember that the possibility of intimacy, of friendship, is there with the coffee pot and the soap dish and the bathroom, and even the awful things we might, the things that look terrible to us in the morning news. When I first studied with Katagiri Roshi, and we didn't have Dokusan a lot, that is, a private interview with the teacher, but once in a while we did, and not very long after I began practicing there and had had very little conversation, I was just shocked at what he understood about who I was. Motivation that we had never talked about. And I realized he was hearing me from someplace deep inside. But we spend most of our time on the surface. On New Year's Day, I gathered with my wife and our son and daughter and all four grandchildren in the St. Paul Union Depot, where we thought we could find a good place to get a good family photograph. And we had a friend who was a good photographer. And so we spent quite a bit of time looking around in the depot at where we could get a really good photograph of the family. Just the right end. She took many, many photographs. So to get the right lighting, the right kind of smile on all of us, light that made us look good, the formation that allowed everyone to be seen. That's a pretty good example of what we do with our minds most of the time. Do you think? We want the right light. We pick and choose from the many streams passing through our awareness in order to have a self-image we can accept with comfort. An image of self as an object in the universe of objects, one that highlights what is acceptable to our thinking self. Zazen, silence, rest for the busy self-serving mind, letting go of the distinctions that we think define who we are, or at least what we intend to be. This is our prescription from the ancestors. And this is what Katagiri Roshi means by going beyond all distinctions. It means radical acceptance of what is brought forth as our life, not because it is a picture that meets our expectations, simply because it is true. And it is true in the deepest sense only if it is not an image dictated by our working consciousness, by our structure of preferences and aversions, our ideas of right and wrong. We investigate in Zazen by simply sitting in the place of not knowing. Katagiri Roshi said, all you have to do is sit quietly. Quietly means no expectation, no drive to achieve something that arises in our mind as a goal. Real warmth and enthusiasm cannot be cosmetics. They arise from within. We don't very often talk about the fruits of Zazen or the fruits of our practice. And there's a good reason for that. Because we want to guard against our common way of applying our effort to achieve some result. Our presence in Zazen must be more open and at the same time more absolute than that. That's what we mean by just sit. A teacher important to me, Norman Fisher, says, it is sitting, letting go of sitting within sitting. Still, it is important to pass on what we can, what we notice that nurtures our continuing effort. I have felt my own practice to be very different every year, year by year by year. And perhaps the most important thing I can say at this point is there is a place of a kind of mountain-like settledness or an ocean-like depth, a connectedness with something fundamental that I can return to or at least touch in passing when I sit Zazen. So I was interested to see Norm Fisher's language. There will be a deep sense of satisfaction in your life because you will know that you have come into contact with what is our basic, most basic and fundamental in the human heart, with love, letting go, and silence. So what can I say about this practice at this point? What do we know about a practice that might be, in Katagiri Roshi's words, very deep? One aspect of the practice characteristic that I want to mention is the importance of regular and committed zazen. We have a practice at Clouds and Water that is very open and generous. We work hard to have schedules and practice activities that most people in one way or another can work into their schedules. We are not monks and nuns. And we have acknowledged that. And Norm Fisher speaks of this kind of practice as a new form of religion, a new kind of religion practice. He says that one of the necessities of this new kind of religion, however, is actual daily practice. Practice that might include activities we take time to do merely for their own sake, with no other goal or objective. Done with devotion, dedication to something larger than ourselves. When your practice is very deep, in my experience, a good part of the path is regular, committed zazen, actually putting time in on the cushion. Katagiri Roshi said, I'm sorry, but it takes time. Real time, physically being someplace. In my own experience, the key factor in that practice is regular commitment. It is more important to me to know that I am going to sit for 15 minutes on Tuesday morning, even if I get up on Tuesday and it's the last thing in the world I feel like doing, than to assume I'm going to be able to sit for an hour or two during the week and I'll get to it when I feel like it. That doesn't work too well. We have lots of good ideas and lots of good thoughts and lots of things to talk about in our practice, and all of that is very important. But what matters, as Norman Fisher points out dramatically, what matters is how you spend your time, what you do, putting yourself on the cushion, being with the community if that's part of your practice. Nothing we do in the way of thoughts or ideas really has any meaning unless it has some grounding in our bodies. Doesn't happen without a body to embody thoughts and ideas. As we have noticed, we have a new schedule for Zazen here in the morning. And in the announcement, the notice about it says, in these times of what we call open Zazen, you can come and go as you please. That's good. It's generous. But each of us has to deal with our understanding of come and go as you please. And I have a suggestion, and that is that we think of it, perhaps, come and go as your commitment, as according to the commitment that you have made for your practice. If I think come and go as you please, my practice for the day is based on what? What feels good? How tired am I? So I recommend, this is what we do generally in the practice period and will. That's an important time to make a commitment to Tuesday morning or Thursday evening or whatever. But I suggest we have some attitude of diligence in what we are doing all the way along. Another poem? I think this is Jane Hirschfield. Continuing on this subject of kinship, inner relationship with everything. Only when I am quiet and do not speak. Jane Hirschfield has a background in our practice of Zazen. Only when I am quiet for a long time and do not speak, do the objects of my life draw near. Shy, the scissors and spoons, the blue mug, hesitant even the towels, for all their intimate knowledge and scent of fresh bleach. How steady their regard as they ponder, dreaming and waking, the entrancement of my daily wanderings and tasks. Drunk on the honey of feelings, the honey of purpose, they seem to be thinking, a quiet judgment that glistens between the glass doorknobs. Yet theirs is not the false reserve of a scarcely concealed ill will, nor that other active shying of pelted rocks. No, not that. For I hear the sigh of happiness each object gives off. If I glimpse for even an instant, the actual instant, as if they believed it possible I might join their circle of simple, passionate thusness, their hidden rituals of luck and solitude. The joyous gap in them, where appears in us the pronoun I. Only when I am quiet for a long time and do not speak do the objects of my life draw near. Norman Fisher. It is admirable and important to have the right ideas about our lives, to believe that goodness is possible, can be cultivated, to view compassion as the most important of human achievements, to want to be mindful, not mindless, and so on. But these attitudes, wonderful as they are, aren't enough to carry us forward in the present world. We also need some concrete form of spiritual practice we can be committed to, an everyday practice which can be a strong basis for those beliefs and intentions. By spiritual practice, I mean activities that we actually do, that we take the time to do, activities that are, in a rational sense, useless, done merely for their own sake, with no object or goal, done with devotion and dedication to something larger than ourselves. I think we have a few minutes. Let's see if you have any comment. Maybe I'll close in a while by reading Jane Hirschfield's poem again. Yes.
What a wonderful way to celebrate your birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes. Somebody tell me, I can't hear that far away. What?
I wasn't going to say anything.
Oh, okay. Okay. Anybody else? Yes, two of you in back of Dee Dee first, and then Dee Dee.
When you were reading, well, with much of what you were speaking about, but especially that poem about when I'm quiet, the things around me draw near, it reminded me a couple weeks ago when it got really, really cold. My car, my hood was frozen shut, and my oil light was on, and so I wasn't able to go to work that day. And I ended up stranded at home all day long. And at first, that seemed like such a hassle and such a bad thing to have happen. But I had the most wonderful day that day. After my schedule was cleared, and I went in and I had my quiet meditation time and lit candles. And it just, everything took on a whole new feeling to it. And I was really feeling that. I had a flashback to that as you were reading that poem.
Yay, thank you. Nice thing to share. Dee Dee.
I do have a question a little bit regarding the struggle between scheduling and being open. So you're tired, you know, the world has made things, you know, you're tired, you're sleepy, and this is your time to meditate. Just this struggle between the body self and your intention self.
Yep.
And how that relates to what you have said.
And with, well, one of my responses is I sit in the morning. I try to sit in the most alert time I can. And the morning isn't as good as it used to be because of the medication I take to sleep. So I have to get up almost an hour before I sit zazen and have either coffee or tea that's not decaffeinated. Or sometimes lately, even on these bitter cold morning, I will go outside and take a quick walk around a few blocks. That's a good way to wake up. Dressed for it, of course. So, and in your case, you have young children. Mornings are going to be busy for you. That's not easy. So, I don't know what to suggest except to find the best way you can. And so, do you try to meditate some in the evening? That's when you have a chance, when people, some people go to bed. That's a hard one. And sometimes maybe you just look at your tiredness and say, yes, this is difficult at this time of day. And sit with it and explore it. Where is it in my body? How does it manifest? Just opening more and more of you can of awareness of what's going on and accepting it. Thank you. Anybody else? Yes, Stu.
Early on in your talk this morning, you were doing a sort of compare and contrast between birth and death, and that I forget the statement you made about death. Do you recall what it was you had said?
About death. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I said that even with my death, bringing forth will continue. Coming forth, bringing forth.
That was it.
Being brought
talk
forth.
About that just a bit more. Can you expand on that?
Oh, yeah. When I look at how deeply interconnected I am with everybody and everything, it's clear to me that this energy called Ken Ford that I have nurtured along and always thought of as a self is just a little shadow of what my life really is, what life really is. And that life that is bigger life doesn't stop with my death. It's a transformation in what we can see, transformation of some kind that's apparent to our consciousness. But if we're really aware of who we are, just as I can't find anything that really started when I was brought forth, there was a change in form. So what we call human life comes into being and what we can give a name to. But nothing, the cells in my body are a continuing process and they will live their life and reproduce with other cells, whether above the ground or below, whatever. The process just continues. Carol.
Happy birthday. I'm happy you came for it.
Thank you very much, Carol. Well, I'm glad that you all made it through that cold spell. That was a bitter one. But it's warmed up a little bit.
Join in the closing chant. May our intention equally penetrate every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way.